The question I have for you, Ed, is Chuck Noll, you know, for the approach that he had to the game, how difficult was it to define the line between, you know, you hear someone getting injured versus hurt? You know, that was something I heard, you know, I think James Harrison talked a little about. I want to hurt people, I don't want to injure them. And that was his sort of, I guess, terminology for how physical he wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of overlaying that on the idea of injury, right, or not being able to play, what's the line in your mind and what was the line that you perceived from your coaches between hurt and injury, and how do you define that line when it's time to decide to play or not?
Right, and a lot of that really depends on the individual and their mindset, how tough they are mentally, not just physically. Some guys over my career, I would see would go in a tank with a simple sprain or something like that, where other guys, you know, they could have a bone sticking out and still be playing. It just depended on the, you know, what type of personalities the players, you know, how they were brought up. I mean, how they were brought up in their home, how they were brought up in high school ball, college ball. If you couldn't protect yourself out there, that's when you got to step aside. When you cannot protect yourself on the field, because you cannot ever go on a football field worrying about getting injured. If you are, you don't even belong in the game to begin with. That has to be put in the far recesses of your mind. No worrying about getting injured. You have to put that aside, and you just got to go out there and, you know, go 100 miles an hour and let the chips fall where they may.
Now, you mentioned that you know, there's some guys that are nicked up, and they're on sidelines, and some will play with, you know, a bone sticking out. I imagine that as a player, when you see the difference between those two types of personalities, that there's probably a different level of respect that you have for those guys. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. It really is. Although, you know, there can be some very, very talented football players, maybe more talented than you are, but maybe don't have the mental toughness to play through pain. You know, I think there's a difference between pain and injury. You know, you're going to be in pain. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, if you're truly injured, nobody's going to question you. But if you're, you know, if you're in the tank, you know, because of some pain or tweak or something like that, you're maybe not held in as high regard as some of your other teammates.
From a coach's standpoint, what are the things that a coach has done that you were most affected by, positive or negative, when it comes to injury? Any stories you can relate to how a coach has dealt with an injury, whether to yourself, whether to a teammate, whether it was a way they prepared the team after an injury, or the way they of a player who was injured. Any stories about that come to mind for you?
Oh, not really. To become a professional football player and make a team, you've got to be have to have a special talent to begin with, or you wouldn't even be there. So the weak links, as I said earlier, were pretty much weeded out during the training camp period, and you didn't have, you know, there could be a handful of guys. There's always going to be some maybe extremely talented receiver or running back or something like that who, when healthy, is an all-pro. But, you know, any little bang or nick or something like that, and all of a sudden they're on the bench, they can't go. You know, I don't want to name names or anything like that, but I played for Seattle, and I also played for San Francisco, so I saw a whole gamut of different types of players, and in a lot of ways, squads weren't that much different relative to the talent, the type of players that made up the squad, and the breakdown between, you know, the tough guys and the guys who were maybe a little soft.
In terms guy like, you know, that calls the players out like Avantez Perfect. Is there any, and I know you're, you know, you're, I'm asking you to sort of place yourself in today's player's shoes and in today's world, but, you know, this is something that I've always wondered about. And D'Angelo Williams actually just came out, the Steelers running back, and said something yesterday on Twitter about this. But when do the players as a whole start to take, start to have a voice when things are happening like the Vontaze Burfict situation where he comes back and then he, from appearances, you know, I don't want to say for certain, but appearances look like he was back into that form of trying to hurt again. When does the Players Association, the players' voices themselves start to take action to protect their own? Because they know they don't want to hurt their own by calling anyone out, and I know it's a lie, but in the same instance, this is a guy hurting their own, to your point earlier about how that's nothing, you just don't do that, and yet it's being done. Why do you think there isn't more said from the Players Association, from the players themselves, about actions like that to protect their own?
That's an excellent question. I wish I had a real brilliant answer for you, but, you know, that's being handled out of the NFL office and the Roger Goodell and, you know, the fines and suspensions that they lay on these players who perform acts like this. I do believe that the Players Association is looking at this. How they can address it, I don't know. I don't know if they've got it. They don't have the teeth in their organization. We don't, with the Players Association, to do anything to these players. That's all in the hands of the NFL office. And, you know, Goodell's doing as good a job as he can, and I think he is, in addressing it. And, you know, he could reach a point, this Burfict guy, I mean, if he screws up one more time like this, you know, he could get suspended maybe for the season or up next coming season. I mean, to really put some teeth into it. But then, if they did that, I'm sure the NFL Players Association would come to Burfict's defense that that wasn't fair, blah, blah, blah. So,
it's a vicious cycle. Setting wrong precedent kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're hitting them in the pocketbook, but it doesn't seem to be having that great of an effect. You know, I see the fine, $75,000. Hell, my total contract for 3 years wasn't $75,000. You know, this, I just shake my head at it, and it doesn't seem to be much of a deterrent. But if you took a game away from them, if you kept them off the field, kept them away from the team, and cut those paychecks, yeah, that there may get their attention.
Well, any other stories, any other comments you wanted to give back to fans, Ed? I mean, you were with the Steelers for about 4 years, and you sadly moved on, but to bigger opportunities, so that was a positive on your part. But, you know, I guess I'd ask, how hard was it for you to leave? And I know I asked you that before, but for the fans out here, how hard was it for you to leave the team? And what did you miss most about it? What did you miss most about it?
Well, it was very difficult to leave Pittsburgh. In 1975, they made plans were afoot to have the two expansion teams, and there would be an expansion draft. Well, you know, my biological clock as a football player was about to expire. I already played four seasons, and at that time, the average career was 3 point something. I don't know what it is now, maybe not much more than that. And, of course, you know, I'm playing behind Jack Lambert, an All-Pro and future Hall of Famer, and Jack Lambert. I knew I could be a starter on other teams in the NFL, and I saw the opportunity of the expansion. So I actually went to the Rooneys and asked them not to protect me, allow me to go in the draft, and they did. But it was with mixed emotion. Even though I played again for Seattle and San Francisco, I am a Steeler through and through. My whole family is. We always come up to Pittsburgh every year for a game, and we'll be coming up this December for the Giants game. So, even though I chose my own path, and I'm glad I did what I did. You know, a man's got to prove himself. He can accomplish something, and I proved I could do that in the way I played in Seattle and San Francisco. I just happened to be on one of the on the roster of one of the greatest football teams, if not the greatest in the history of the league.
Exactly, and you know, it's. I'm sure the Rooneys had a hard time handling that because they, you know, they value their guys. And there's no question about that. They always value their guys.
Well, I've been up again. I've been up Pittsburgh. We had our 40-year reunion a couple years ago, and got to see Mr. Rooney and Dan and talk to him and Art Jr. And you know, it's like I never left, and it's just it's home, and it always will be home for me.
Thank you so much, Ed. We really appreciate that. We appreciate you taking the time.
It was fun. Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Thanks again, and hopefully we can do this again soon. This is our first episode.
When do I get my check, guys?
It's already in the mail. It's already in the mail.
I'll send you a book, Ed. This was fun. I thank you guys for thinking of me and to make the effort to call me.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you again, Ed, for doing it. I know it's taking time out of a day, and I appreciate you doing
it. Hey, I'm retired. It's Friday. Forget about it.
I can't wait till I can say that.
A few more years to go, right?
Good stuff.
All right, you take care, Ed. Have a great rest of the weekend.
All right, Ron, Mike, bye-bye.
Take care. This has been Steel Nation Radio, thanking you for listening on our very first episode presented by Steeler Takeaways. I'm Mike Pelaya for Ron Lippick. We'll catch you next time.